Hello, and welcome to the Gumbo Ed Nurse Practitioner CE Podcast.
I am your host, Samantha Junius Arsimaw, and this is episode 28. To earn your CEUs for this podcast, find the journal titled The Nurse Practitioner. Find the article, take the test, and earn your CEUs. Today's article is titled The ABCs of Atrial Fibrillation. It is from The Nurse Practitioner, Volume 45, Number 8, by Dr. Mohammed Tofik Al Hussein, Nurse Practitioner, and Lauren Kilfoyle, Nurse Practitioner. This free article is worth 1.5 contact hours and one pharmacology consult hour. A link to get to this free article will be on the show notes. Now let's get started. Atrial fibrillation is an alteration of normal sinus rhythm characterized by quivering of the atria, resulting in ineffective contractility. At a cellular level, the atrioventricular node is overloaded with depolarizing impulses up to 300 to 600 per minute. Due to the pooling and static movement of blood within the atria, there is an increased risk of thromboembolism development in the left atrial appendage. Prompt treatment and long-term management of atrial fibrillation is imperative in order to reduce mortality related to ischemic stroke, coronary artery occlusion, or pulmonary embolism. On to diagnosis. An acute clinical diagnosis of atrial fibrillation is made through EKG monitoring. The EKG for those with atrial fibrillation is characterized by the absence of a P wave as well as irregularity in the RR interval. Atrial fibrillation may occur episodically, known as paroxysmal atrial fibrillation, continuously, which is known as persistent atrial fibrillation, or permanently due to unresponsiveness to treatment. Atrial fibrillation is further assessed through chest radiography and echocardiography. Additionally, atrial fibrillation is characterized as valvular and non-valvular through diagnostic imaging. A clinical diagnosis of valvular atrial fibrillation is characterized by the moderate to severe mitral stenosis or the presence of a mechanical heart valve, while non-valvular atrial fibrillation requires the absence of rheumatic mitral stenosis, a mechanical heart valve, or mitral valve repair. Patient education. Due to the narrow therapeutic index of many prescribed medications, patients should be advised to the importance of medication adherence and symptoms of medication overdose. Prevention education for cardiovascular disease should include the implementation of healthy lifestyle practices such as individualized diet and exercise planning based on age and comorbidities, smoking cessation, and frequent monitoring of cardiovascular risk factors. Now to the mnemonic. The recommended treatment options for the management of newly diagnosed and permanent atrial fibrillation includes anticoagulation, beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, cardioversion, diuretics, and other drugs, electrolytes, and electricity. The nurse practitioner should aim to achieve a heart rate of less than 110 beats per minute and provide treatment that prioritizes the control of rate over rhythm. As these approaches are associated with optimal outcomes in seminal articles in the field of cardiology, the nurse practitioner should acknowledge individual patient circumstances and comorbidities and complete a baseline assessment of renal and hepatic function before initiating or titrating pharmacotherapy. Anticoagulation. Anticoagulation therapy reduces the risk of thromboembolism in atrial fibrillation. Patients with a lower stroke risk and those with contraindications are considered unsuitable candidates for anticoagulant therapy. Atrial fibrillation treatment with anticoagulation requires careful consideration for existing comorbidities and potential adverse reactions. Though the use of anticoagulants has been associated with a reduced risk of ischemic stroke, the nurse practitioner should screen for abnormalities in blood work, with special consideration to the International Normalized Ratio, or INR, electrolyte imbalance, and liver and kidney function. Non-vitamin K antagonist oral anticoagulants, or NOACs, are recommended over vitamin K antagonists in non-valvular atrial fibrillation, though this is clinically dependent on the patient's stroke or bleeding risk. The choice of anticoagulant therapy in atrial fibrillation requires a thorough understanding of the patient's risk factors and medical history, with special considerations for stroke risk. The recommended method of assessing the patient's risk of stroke in non-valvular atrial fibrillation is commonly known as the CHAS-VASc scoring system. A link to a video of this scoring system can be found at gumboeducation.com/CHAD. The patient's risk score for an ischemic event is calculated with consideration for presence of congestive heart failure, hypertension, diabetes, vascular disease, and a history of stroke, transient ischemic attack, or thromboembolism, as well as age and gender. In the context of non-valvular atrial fibrillation, low-scoring patients should not be offered anticoagulant treatment, while treatment should be considered for those with higher scores indicating increased risk of stroke. Let's try some questions. Question number one, the patient receives a diagnosis of atrial fibrillation, and the clinician explains that this occurs when A, the bottom part of the heart quivers, B, the heart contracts in a very strong manner, C, a node in the upper area of the heart receives too many impulses. The correct answer is C, a node in the upper area of the heart receives too many impulses. Question number two. With atrial fibrillation, there is pooling and static movement of blood within the atria, which increases the risk of the development of A, hemorrhage, B, thromboembolism, C, cardiomyopathy event. The correct answer is B, thromboembolism. Question number three. In patients who have atrial fibrillation, the EKG is usually characterized by A, a short ST interval, B, wide QRS complexes, or C, the absence of P waves. The correct answer is C, the absence of P waves. Question number four. Atrial fibrillation is considered valvular if the patient has A, pulmonary hypertension, B, concomitant heart failure, or C, moderate to severe mitral stenosis. The correct answer is C, moderate to severe mitral stenosis. Question number five. Before prescribing an anticoagulant to patients who have atrial fibrillation, the patient should be screened for any abnormalities in lab results, especially in the INR, electrolyte balance, liver function, and A, thyroid function, B, kidney function, or C, white blood cell count. The correct answer is B, kidney function. On to NOAC therapy. The Canadian Cardiovascular Society recommends the use of NOAC therapy rather than warfarin, which is a vitamin A antagonist, in non-valvular atrial fibrillation. In determining a patient's suitability for a particular NOAC treatment regimen, the nurse practitioner should be mindful of the contraindications for use. There will be a link for contraindication for NOAC therapy at gumboeducation.com/Chad. The nurse practitioner should also be aware of the risk for bleeding based on the Hezblad score. This will also be found at gumboeducation.com/Chad. Recent guidelines recommend NOAC treatment over the use of warfarin in patients with a history of intracranial bleeds, variable diet, and poor access to lab testing. Due to the distinct pharmacologic profiles of each NOAC, the nurse practitioner should consider the patient's medical history, diagnostic results, and individual preference when initiating treatment. On to vitamin K antagonist anticoagulation. The use of warfarin is recommended in patients with moderate to severe mitral stenosis or the presence of a mechanical valve. The nurse practitioner should consider the use of warfarin in patients with contraindications for NOAC therapy, except for in pregnancy, when low molecular weight heparin is recommended. Warfarin dosing should be titrated based on the patient's INR in order to maintain a consistent therapeutic level of 2.0 to 3.0 and 2.5 to 3.5 in patients with mechanical valves, though INR ranges remain patient-specific. Combination therapy. On rare occasions, such as after the surgical insertion of a coronary artery stent, the short-term use of antiplatelet medications prepared with warfarin or with a NOAC is indicated. However, recent recommendations from the American Academy of Family Physicians advises against the long-term use of a combination of anticoagulants and antiplatelet therapies due to the significantly increased risk of major bleeding. In fact, antiplatelet therapy, including aspirin and or clopidogrel, used in combination with warfarin or dabigatran, has been associated with adverse reactions and a low safety profile. Alternate interventions. For patients for whom long-term anticoagulation therapy is contraindicated, the nurse practitioner should consider percutaneous implant that occludes the left atrial appendage, a site where many clots originate, as an intervention for anticoagulation. The device lowers the risk of thromboembolism in atrial fibrillation. Beta adrenergic blockers. In the acute and long-term management of atrial fibrillation, the nurse practitioner should implement treatment with beta adrenergic blockers in order to effectively control heart rate. The use of beta blockers is preferred over calcium channel blockers in patients diagnosed with coronary artery disease or systolic dysfunction. For patients experiencing acute exacerbations of atrial fibrillation, the use of an IV beta blocker may be indicated in order to control ventricular rate. For long-term management of heart rate, the nurse practitioner should implement treatment with an oral beta blocker. Beta blockers should be administered and titrated in order to achieve a heart rate below 110 beats per minute. Now on to the C of the ABCs, calcium channel blockers. The use of non-dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers is recommended for managing heart rate in atrial fibrillation. There is no conclusive evidence to favor calcium channel blockers over beta blockers for rate management, though calcium channel blockers are preferred in patients with asthma. This treatment option should be avoided in patients with decompensated heart failure. Doses and routes of administration should be titrated to achieve the controlled rate below 110 beats per minute.
Time for more questions.
Question number 6. When prescribing treatments for the patient's non-valvular atrial fibrillation, the recommended anticoagulant is A. Warfarin, B. vitamin K antagonists, or C. non-vitamin K antagonist oral anticoagulants, or NOACs. The correct answer is C, NOACs, or non-vitamin K antagonist oral anticoagulants. Question number 7. In the acronym CHADVASC scoring for anticoagulation therapy eligibility, what does the H stand for? A, hypertension, B, hyperkalemia, or C, hypomagnesemia? The correct answer is A, hypertension. Question number 8. A patient's risk score for an ischemic event is calculated by considering gender, age, and presence of comorbidities such as A, dementia, B, diabetes mellitus, or C, autoimmune disorders. The correct answer is B, diabetes. Question number 9. In the HESBLAD scoring system for bleeding risk assessment, the D stands for A, diuretic use, B, digoxin use, or C, drug and alcohol use. The correct answer is C, drug and alcohol use. Question number 10. NOAC therapy for atrial fibrillation is being considered for a female patient. The patient reveals that she is pregnant. The patient is advised that in pregnancy, A, NOAC use is contraindicated, B, NOAC use during the first and third trimesters is safe, or C, the effects of NOAC therapy are enhanced, which is helpful for atrial fibrillation recovery. The correct answer is A, NOAC use is contraindicated. On to question number 11. If a patient has moderate to severe mitral stenosis, the recommended anticoagulant treatment is A, aspirin, B, warfarin, or C, clopidogrel or Plavix. The correct answer is B, warfarin. Question number 12. Miss Q has a mechanical valve and is taking warfarin. Her dosing should be titrated to maintain a consistent therapeutic INR of A, 1 to 2, B, 2.5 to 3.5, or C, 4 to 5. The correct answer is B,
2.5 to 3.5. Now back to the article. Another C in the ABCs of atrial fibrillation is cardioversion. A critical step in the process of managing acute atrial fibrillation is determining the stability of the presenting patient. Hemodynamic instability refers to a cluster of symptoms secondary to the dysrhythmia that indicate decompensation and include a systolic reading of less than 90 millimeters of mercury, altered level of consciousness, cardiac ischemia, and/or worsening heart failure. The use of electrical cardioversion is recommended in symptomatic unstable atrial fibrillation. Cardioversion to a stable sinus rhythm can be achieved through pharmacologic or electrical means, depending on the patient's existing comorbidities and acute presentation. For pharmacologic cardioversion, flecainide or propafenone can be used in patients without structural heart conditions. Amiodarone may be indicated for acute management of atrial fibrillation, as discussed later. For patients with acute atrial fibrillation requiring immediate conversion to sinus rhythm, synchronized electrical cardioversion is indicated. Prior to the procedure, the nurse practitioner should order anticoagulation as well as sedation. If the duration of the atrial fibrillation exceeds 48 hours or the duration is unknown, a transesophageal echo may be indicated to assess for the presence of a thrombus within the atrium or atrial appendage prior to cardioversion. In the case of elective cardioversion, treatment with a NOAC or vitamin K antagonist 3 weeks prior to the procedure is recommended. After the procedure, the patient should undergo anticoagulant therapy for a minimum of 4 weeks, regardless of the procedure's elective or emergent nature. Diuretics. Atrial fibrillation management requires careful consideration for fluid balance, especially for patients with concomitant heart failure. The stretching and remodeling of the atria in heart failure can trigger the onset of atrial fib, while chronic dysfunction associated with atrial fibrillation may cause heart failure. With an understanding of pathophysiology of atrial fibrillation and concomitant heart failure, the nurse practitioner might consider the administration of a diuretic in order to achieve a therapeutic effect of reduced cardiac congestion. A recent systematic review and meta-analysis identified mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists, including spironolactone or eplerenone, as a therapeutic treatment option for atrial fibrillation, associating their use with significant reductions in new onset and recurrent atrial fibrillation. On to other drugs. The use of amiodarone as an antiarrhythmic and rate control agent may be indicated in order to maintain normal sinus rhythm, most effectively in cases of uncontrolled ventricular rate. In fact, the American Association of Family Physicians recommend the use of amiodarone as a rhythm-controlling agent when rate-controlling agents are ineffective, though its use should be limited to unresponsiveness or contraindications to other therapies. While amiodarone may be effective for the management of atrial fibrillation in acute settings, the many systemic adverse reactions, including thyroid, urinary, skin, gastrointestinal, and CNS changes, may limit its use long-term. A thorough medical history and ongoing follow-up is required for patients receiving treatment with amiodarone. Digoxin may also be used as a rate-controlling agent in the context of atrial fibrillation as a second-line treatment option, though its use requires caution due to the drug's potential adverse reactions. In fact, a recent systematic review and meta-analysis evaluating the adverse reactions of digoxin use in patients with atrial fibrillation found an association between the drug's use and all-cause mortality. Additionally, pharmacokinetics of digoxin involves a slow peak effect of rate control, which is not optimal in cases of severe acute atrial fibrillation. However, the update to atrial fibrillation guideline from the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology and Heart Rhythm Society maintains a weak recommendation of digoxin administration in patients with atrial fibrillation and acute coronary syndrome with associated left ventricular dysfunction and heart failure or hemodynamic instability. Due to its rate-controlling action with no associated effect on blood pressure, digoxin may be indicated in patients experiencing clinically low blood pressure. Due to digoxin's narrow therapeutic range, the nurse practitioner should titrate serum levels below 1.2 nanograms per milliliter in order to avoid toxicity.
Time for more questions.
Question number 13. For patients who have coronary artery disease or systolic dysfunction, which of the following types of medications is preferred for treating atrial fibrillation? A. Beta blockers. B. Magnesium sulfate. Or C. Calcium channel blockers. The correct answer is B. Beta blockers. Question number 14. Mr. R has a history of asthma, but now needs treatment for atrial fibrillation. The class of medications preferable for managing his heart rate is A. Diuretics, B. Beta blockers, or C. Calcium channel blockers. The correct answer is C. Calcium channel blockers. Question number 15. A patient with which condition is advised that electrical cardioversion is recommended as treatment? A. Asymptomatic stable atrial fibrillation. B. Symptomatic unstable atrial fibrillation. Or C. Hemodynamically stable atrial fibrillation. The correct answer is B. Symptomatic unstable atrial fibrillation. Question number 16. A patient with acute atrial fibrillation will be undergoing synchronized electrical cardioversion. Prior to this treatment, it is recommended to prescribe A. Flecainide and amiodarone, B. Anticoagulation and sedation, or C. Potassium and thiazide diuretics. The correct answer is B, anticoagulation and sedation. Question number 17. If a patient's atrial fibrillation is not effectively managed with rate-controlling agents, the American Association of Family Physicians recommends controlling the heart rhythm by prescribing A. Digoxin, B. Lidocaine, or C. Amiodarone. The correct answer is C. Amiodarone. Now back to the article. Electrolyte balance, particularly of potassium and magnesium, is essential for the maintenance of normal sinus rhythm and to the prevention of adverse cardiac events. In patients with chronic cardiovascular comorbidities, being treated with diuretics and/or angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, monitoring the electrolyte balance is especially important. Potassium. Due to the essential role of potassium in maintaining an electrical gradient at a cellular level, any extreme alterations in its balance can precipitate or worsen the existence of cardiac dysrhythmias. In fact, recent evidence has associated low serum potassium, less than 3.5 millimoles per liter, or high serum potassium, greater than 5 millimoles per liter, with an increased risk of mortality in patients with atrial fibrillation. On to magnesium. Magnesium. In a recent randomized controlled trial conducted by Bayuda and colleagues in Tunisia, the synergistic effect of high and low dosing of magnesium sulfate combined with traditional rate-controlling agents in controlling heart rate in rapid atrial fibrillation was compared against a placebo. The three treatment arms, specifically low-dose magnesium sulfate, high-dose and placebo, were evaluated for their efficacy in achieving and maintaining at least a 20% reduction in ventricular rate from baseline or a reduction to 90 beats per minute after 4 hours and 24 hours in combination with standard rate-controlling agents such as digoxin, deltaism, and beta blockers. A statistically significant number of patients in the treatment group receiving magnesium sulfate achieved rate control by 4 hours compared with the placebo. After 24 hours, more of the low-dose magnesium group had achieved and maintained sinus rhythm, a statistically significant difference from the placebo group and the high group. Byuta and colleagues recommended the use of 4.5 grams of magnesium sulfate in 100 milliliters of 0.9% sodium chloride IV in conjunction with standard rate controlling agents to achieve and maintain rate control in rapid atrial fibrillation.
On to the last set of questions.
Question number 18. When Byuta and colleagues in 2019 administered a placebo, low-dose magnesium sulfate, and high-dose magnesium sulfate, respectively, to three groups of patients with rapid atrial fibrillation, the group that was most likely to achieve and maintain sinus rhythm after 24 hours was the group that received A, the placebo, B, low-dose magnesium sulfate, or C, high-dose magnesium sulfate. The correct answer is B, low-dose magnesium sulfate. Question number 19. The article explains that patients who have symptomatic atrial fibrillation and heart failure with a reduced left ventricular ejection fraction should be treated with A, catheter ablation, B, amiodarone therapy, or C, pharmacologic cardioversion. The correct answer is A, catheter ablation. And the last question, question number 20. Mr. Z has atrial fibrillation and has been unresponsive to rate and rhythm controlling therapies. He has provided a third line treatment that includes A, implantation of a cardiac pacemaker, B, surgical insertion of a coronary artery stent, or C, a percutaneous implant as an intervention for anticoagulation. The correct answer is A, implantation of a cardiac pacemaker. Now back to the article. Electricity. Catheter ablation, a procedure used to cause remodeling of cardiac tissue, is recommended for patients with symptomatic atrial fibrillation and heart failure with a reduced left ventricular ejection fraction. In fact, in a recent randomized controlled trial comparing long-term success of catheter ablation versus amiodarone in managing atrial fibrillation in patients with heart failure, catheter ablation was associated with more optimal outcomes. The benefits of catheter ablation for patients with persistent atrial fibrillation may include symptom reduction and decreased likelihood of hospitalization. Given the number of existing ablation procedures that isolate particular regions within the atria, the nurse practitioner should be aware of each patient's indications for treatment. Due to the influence of pulmonary veins on atrial fibrillation occurrence, pulmonary vein isolation may be required. This method removes the triggers that may potentiate fibrillation and therefore may be effective in paroxysmal atrial fibrillation. Alternately, a maze procedure creates scar tissue within the atria to ablate atrial fibrillation while maintaining electrical conduction via the sinus atrial node. AV nodal ablation is indicated in patients who remain unresponsive to pharmacologic rate controlling interventions or ablation procedures. Due to the destruction of pacing cells, patients receiving AV nodal ablation will likely require permanent right ventricular pacing. The implantation of cardiac pacemaker may be indicated as a third-line treatment in patients with atrial fibrillation who remain unresponsive to rate and rhythm-controlling therapies. However, a permanent pacemaker is required in cases of AV nodal ablation. Right ventricular pacing has historically been indicated in patients after AV nodal ablation, though biventricular pacing may be preferable in cases of left ventricular dysfunction. a randomized controlled trial comparing biventricular pacing to traditional right ventricular pacing determined that biventricular pacing yield improved outcomes in patients with AV block, heart failure, and left ventricular systolic dysfunction.
Hello.
Where
you at? On to the conclusion. In managing atrial fibrillation in patients, the nurse practitioner should be diligent and efficient in providing necessary care to return to normal sinus rhythm. For the patient experiencing persistent atrial fibrillation, pharmacotherapy should be administered and titrated in order to prevent adverse cardiac events and maintain hemodynamic stability. In the acute setting, the use of this mnemonic device in atrial fibrillation management will provide ease of recall for best evidence. Collaboration with the patient as well as ample education is necessary in the provision of adequate and sustainable management of atrial fibrillation. Okay, that's it. The article in this podcast is free, and you can find this podcast at gumboeducation.com to earn your free CEUs. You do not have to be a member of any association for this free CE. I am also offering my bullying prevention CE for free. You will find all the information in the show notes. I love introducing new artists, so for the outro, I have a new artist. I hope you enjoy the music. Until next time.
So tell me, can you understand me? Yeah, I've been through the worst, man, you know this shit hurt. I can't trust my own family. And I'm so high, I'm above all the clouds. I'm too far from the ground, never landing. And everybody turned their back on me, they ain't believing me, they left me stranded. I knew the guys like a NASCAR, yeah. Got my life like a NASA, yeah. I ain't hold on, past, yeah. 101, that's where we started it. Can't believe they put me last, put them all first. Got the hoes on me, y'all like